Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we'll have highlights from the Climate March in San Diego, one of many held around the world. We'll have some new data on how Medicare expansion is helping families with children. You'll hear about a debate coming up between local Congressman Duncan Hunter and his opponent James Kimber, and how you can send in your questions for the debate. Learn what's hot on County Supervisor's agenda this week. Plus, hear why the San Diego Unified District said thanks but no thanks and is returning the school district's armored vehicle. Hear how technology helped SDG&E predict where last week's microbursts would hit and have crews already in place to fix the storm damage. Plus, on Green Scene, learn about new clean vehicle legislation that the governor has just signed into law. The U.S. Border Patrol is testing body cameras on its agents, and we'll have the details. We also have news about confirmed cases of a severe virus that is striking children in San Diego. Opera and fine art in East County? Yes, find out about a local winery that's opened a sculpture garden and is offering operatic performances in Ramona that have local music, art, and wine lovers saying bravo. Also hear how challenged students at Living Independently in El Cajon have been helped by Heartland Youth Builds Charter School. Fire season is here. Are you ready to evacuate? The County News Service offers some tips on how to prepare before the next wildfire strikes. Now, since I was without power for a full day last week and busy dealing with all that storm damage, the second half of our show today will be reruns of some stories we hope you'll enjoy and find informative. The Adams Avenue Street Fair, with over 100 musical acts, rolls out this weekend, so we thought it would be a good time to replay our interview with one of the talented performers, Raylee Nicole. We'll also be re-airing our recent interview with Supervisor Diane Jacob on her concerns over the state releasing sexual predators in East County. Plus, on Jobs Talk, get details about a new sick leave bill signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown and how it may affect you, your employees, or your family. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. On Sunday, more than 500,000 people around the world joined in a climate march calling on government leaders worldwide to take action to stop climate change. That included an estimated 1,000 to 2,000 people marching in the streets right here in San Diego. Among the speakers here was San Diego City Councilman Todd Gloria.
To those of us living in a state that is going through one of the worst droughts in recent memory, to those of us who lived through last week's microburst storm that caused so much destruction in our city, we are seeing the effects of climate change every single day, and we cannot wait for decision makers in Washington to come around. We must take action today.
Gloria promised that he will present a climate action plan to the city council this week. The march here was one of 2,700 marches in more than 150 countries around the world in anticipation of a meeting this week at which 120 world leaders will sit down to discuss what to do about addressing climate change. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Getting parents health coverage improves the well-being of their children, according to new research that says states that expand Medicaid are doing a much better job of covering those adults. According to the report from the Urban Institute, states that have rejected Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act have about twice as many uninsured parents as states that opted for the expansion. And Michael Cassidy, president of the Commonwealth Institute, says numerous studies have confirmed the assumption that kids do better when their parents have access to health care.
If we say we care about the health care of our kids, we also have to be concerned about the health care of their parents, because we know that the two are very much linked.
Critics of health care reform said it would be unaffordable. So far, however, it has proven to be far less costly than expected. Genevieve Kenny with the Urban Institute, one of the study authors, says the effects of healthcare reform on children and adults seem to have been overshadowed by the titanic ideological battles around the law.
There's been so much focus and rhetoric around the politics of the Affordable Care Act, and maybe not quite as much on the human dimension. What is at stake for families?
According to Cassidy, there are a number of reasons children do better when their parents have health coverage. He says staying healthy means parents are physically, financially, and emotionally better able to care for their kids. He adds parents with health insurance understand the system better.
They're better able to support and care for their children. But then in addition, they're familiar with how to connect to a doctor because the parents know how insurance works and how to use it.
Dan Hyman reporting for the Public News Service.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. The public is invited to submit questions for Republican Congressman Duncan D. Hunter and his Democratic challenger, James Kimber. The two candidates have agreed to debate on Friday, September 26th from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Center at 900 Rancho San Diego Parkway in El Cajon. Both candidates are veterans. The debate is sponsored by the Veterans Campaign and by the National Association for Uniformed Services. However, the questions are not limited to veterans or military issues. All topics are open for debate. You can submit your questions online in advance at veteranscampaign.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Local Government Report. County supervisors have some important items on their agenda. On Tuesday, county supervisors will vote on a proposal to improve fire safety for our region based on recommendations made by area fire chiefs. The proposal includes purchasing an additional firefighting helicopter for the Sheriff's Department and authorizing the county fire chief to use call-when-needed funds to pre-position ground strike teams during high-risk red flag days when additional resources are needed here. In addition, the plan includes improvements in communications as well as reimbursing the city to use its night flying helicopter when needed to fight fires. Supervisors will also vote on adoption of a consolidated countywide fire code, which would replace a hodgepodge of different codes among the many fire districts. In addition, the board will vote Tuesday on whether to fund construction of a new Lakeside Sheriff substation and authorize a search for a site for a sheriff's East County investigative unit. At Wednesday's meeting, supervisors will weigh a proposed expansion of the Viejas Hotel in Alpine, as well as improvements to the intersection of Buckman Springs Road and Oak Drive in the Campo Lake Morena community in order to enhance safety for pedestrians and bicyclists in the rural area.
San Diego Unified School District says thanks, but no tanks. You won't be seeing an armored vehicle on San Diego Unified School District campuses after all. The district has decided to return a mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle, or MRAP, often called MRAP, that had been donated by the United States Department of Defense. The district had planned to use the vehicle to respond to emergencies such as school shootings. But in the wake of the Ferguson, Missouri shooting of an unarmed teen, a national spotlight has been cast on use of armored vehicles by law enforcement and now school districts. Superintendent Cindy Martin issued a statement Thursday indicating that some members of our community are not comfortable with the district having this vehicle. If any part of our community is not comfortable with it, we cannot be comfortable with it. Some members of the San Diego Unified School District Board had indicated they were unaware of the district's acquisition of the armored vehicle before media reports surfaced. The vehicle, valued at over $700,000, was donated to the district by the Department of Defense through a grant, though the district did have to pay $5,000 to transport it to San Diego. The decision to return the vehicle was praised by school board trustee Scott Barnett, who last week announced his opposition to the idea. Barnett reacted to the news, stating he believes Superintendent Martin made the right decision to return the vehicle. I'm glad we do not have a military armored vehicle as part of our fleet, he said. As reported in the UT San Diego, Reuben Littlejohn, chief of the district's school police department, earlier had said that he thought the vehicle, the MRAP, would be an asset to the district in an emergency. But he noted that public feelings about the perceived militarization of law enforcement have changed after the shooting of an unarmed teen, Michael Brown, and the heavy use of military-grade vehicles and equipment by police in response to protesters. Public sentiment regarding the use of excess military equipment by law enforcement agencies since the civil unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, has pointed to the need to be more sensitive to perception, Littlejohn said in a statement issued by the district. The value that this defensive tool would bring cannot exceed the value of retaining the public's trust, confidence, and perceptions of how we will protect our students. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Last week's storms meant that San Diego's electric grid endured an onslaught. A record-breaking five-day heat wave set new peak demand records 2 days in a row, reaching 4,890 megawatts of power used in a single day. High winds, microbursts, followed by sudden downpours and flooding, further taxed the system, causing many trees to fall and numerous electric power outages. Now, you probably know that repair crews from San Diego Gas and Electric Company were working around the clock to help restore power. But did you know that SDG&E has the largest weather sensor network in the United States, with 150 sensors throughout its service territory? Hannon Eisenman, communications manager for SDG&E, told the Eco Report how SDG&E's smart grid devices helped restore power to its customers. He explained that the sensors track adverse weather conditions to help make the power grid more reliable, enabling SDG&E to respond more quickly during both severe weather and fires. Thanks to the weather sensors, SDG&E actually knew where the microbursts were developing. Crews were rushed to the threatened areas and were already in place and prepared when the microbursts occurred. They were then able to avoid faults and reroute power to affected areas faster. Now, I actually saw this in person when a microburst, that's a downdraft from a thunderstorm, occurred in my neighborhood. I saw an SDG&E crew in place under the wires just as the first raindrops started to fall, and moments before the storm engulfed my vehicle and high winds suddenly sent a tree crashing down next to my car. Eisenman said that technology allowed SDG&E to switch lines from an automated control room without even sending a crew out to flip a switch in the field. SDG&E also employed wireless fault indicators to pinpoint the problems in distribution lines so that the crews could find and repair them quicker. So while there were a lot of crews working around the clock, SDG&E says that smart technology also helped the utility repair damages faster and get the lights back on quicker than in the past. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
In response to complaints over alleged misuse of force against detainees and suspected border crossers, the U.S. Border Patrol has announced it will begin testing body cameras on its agents starting October 1st. Initially, the testing will be done at the agency's training center in New Mexico. If found to be successful, the cameras could be implemented more broadly to equip agents along the U.S.-Mexican border. USA Today reports that U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Gil Kurlowski made the announcement Thursday. He also revealed that the agency has been given new authority to investigate misconduct of its agents after releasing a report earlier this year which found some use of force incidents lacked justification. The Border Patrol also announced this week that it will form an advisory group to develop best practice law enforcement and integrity recommendations. New York City Police Commissioner William Bratton and former U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration Chief Karen Tandy will lead the panel. The UT San Diego reports the immigration rights group's Alliance San Diego, which has been pushing for body cameras to be adopted by the Border Patrol, hailed the announcement. Executive Director Andrea Guerrero says that while not the total solution, the cameras are a critical tool in ensuring transparency and accountability. Statistically, body cameras reduce complaints against officers where used elsewhere, but Gabe Pacheco, a San Diego spokesman for the National Border Control Council that represents over 17,000 line agents nationwide, says that while cameras can be helpful, some agents also have raised potential problems. Will this tool be used against Border Patrol agents to administratively get us into trouble? He asks, adding that some agents have voiced concerns that the cameras might make agents hesitant to use force where needed, potentially endangering agents in situations where split-second judgments must be made. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Capping off National Drive Electric Week, Governor Jerry Brown has signed half a dozen bills to strengthen California's best-in-the-nation electric vehicle market. These include bills that will grant free or reduced rates and high-occupancy toll lanes to clean air vehicles, increase the number of clean air vehicles that may be allowed in high-occupancy vehicle lanes, regardless of how many people are in them, require commercial property owners and residential landlords to allow renters to install electric vehicle chargers, and provide incentives to increase the availability of zero-emission vehicles in low-income communities. The governor's actions build on the state's efforts to help California's electric vehicle market grow, including prior actions by the governor to establish a target of 1.5 million zero-emission vehicles on the road in California by 2025. California now accounts for 40% of the nation's plug-in electric vehicle sales, and earlier this month, California surpassed 100,000 plug-in electric vehicles sold. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Opera in East County? Bravo! These were the sounds of celebration at Salerno Winery in Ramona, which has forged a partnership with lovers of wine, music, and fine art. Founder Herman Salerno, a former opera singer from Italy, and his wife Rose have teamed up with Jaime Chalejon, a Mexican businessman, to unveil an expansive sculpture garden featuring works by over 20 world-renowned artists, including Jorge and Javier Martín, Tanda Wu, Julian Bravo, and Pedro Cervantes. At the grand opening celebration, guests dined on paella and savored wine, truffles, and port. Visitors to the winery can now stroll along pathways with streams, a fountain, and life-size chessboard while admiring the artwork. Wine tasting is offered at an outdoor tasting room and deck overhanging vineyards and the sculpture garden, and soon an expansive new tasting room will be built. Rumor has it that an indoor stage for opera performances on the property is also in the works. As for the wine, Salerno Winery uses traditional handcrafted Italian methods that have won over 65 awards, including international honors. The winery is open on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, when guests can enjoy not only wine and pizza cooked up in an outdoor oven, but also opera performed by Salerno and well-known Mexican operatic stars. And that's music to the ears of opera lovers and fine art aficionados in East County and across San Diego.
Hey!
Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The County News Service reports that four children at Rady Children's Hospital have been confirmed by state and county health officials as California's first cases of enterovirus D68. Patients range from age 2 to 13. All are recovering from the serious respiratory illness, according to the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency. Samples of additional local patients are now undergoing testing. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, states, "We are monitoring this closely with our local health care providers." She adds that overall, respiratory illnesses have not increased significantly countywide. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that the illness has caused severe respiratory illness in at least 16 states in the past month. Most of the illnesses were diagnosed in young children, many with a history of asthma. Dr. John Bradley, pediatric infectious disease expert at Rady Children's Hospital, said the hospital started seeing a steady rise in the number of children coming in with respiratory conditions in mid-August, and the numbers continued to increase. but he assured that most children in enterovirus D68 or EVD68 has symptoms similar to a common cold, so a trip to the emergency department is generally not necessary unless the child has difficulty breathing or an unusually high fever. Some enterovirus infections, however, can be serious and lead to respiratory illness requiring hospitalization. Neurologic illnesses such as aseptic meningitis, which is swelling of the tissue covering the brain and spinal cord, and encephalitis, swelling of the brain, can result. Infants, children, and teenagers are most likely to get infected with enteroviruses. The strain is an unusual variety of enterovirus, not commonly seen until recently. There is no treatment except management of symptoms. Thus, preventing spread of the illness is key to the limiting its spread. Most enterovirus infections in the United States occur seasonally during the summer and fall. County health officials recommend taking measures similar to trying to avoid the flu, like washing hands often with soap and water for 20 seconds, especially after changing diapers. Avoid touching eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Don't hug, kiss, or share cups or eating utensils with people who are sick, and disinfect frequently touched surfaces such as toys and doorknobs, especially if someone is sick. This has been Leon Thompson with the Health Report on East County Magazine. Living independently is for everyone. It's also the name of a nonprofit in El Cajon. Estrianda Fulford Yates is the president of Living Independently is for Everyone, a nonprofit corporation that benefits individuals with any level of disability with the goal of independent living. Participants receive life training, job training, and learn social skills that accelerate their ability to live independently. Estrianda teamed with Debbie Dolan, the volunteer coordinator with the Heartland Coalition's Youth Build Charter High School, to place three students, David Lyons, Sean Fuentes, and Luis Sanchez, at the Heartland Coalition Youth Build Charter School. The trio made a world of difference. The three have accomplished so much and given so much back to the class that State Senator Joel Anderson chose to honor them with the California Senate Certificate of Recognition for their outstanding volunteer achievements. Here is the story behind this award in Debbie Dolan's own words. I am the volunteer coordinator for Heartland Coalition. In August of 2013, we partnered with Youth Build Charter School of California and opened a new school campus in City Heights. We offer a high school diploma program to students 16 to 24 years of age. With only 2 weeks' notice, we had to transform an abandoned daycare and two church classrooms into a senior high school. I was offered volunteers through a program called Living Independently is for Everyone in El Cajon. We needed the help. The trade was that I would teach the volunteers different skills typically used in everyday life. Simple enough, right? Here's the catch. These were volunteers with special needs. Believe it or not, because of them, we opened right on schedule. My volunteers have been the best workers I've ever known. They have been coming in every Wednesday for the past year, even during winter, spring, and summer breaks. They have learned how to do many things. Some things were a struggle for them. Even if they can't actually do the work, they can explain how it is done. I've learned so much from them. I've learned to stay calm and keep on task. The work will get done. All three were on time, every day, every week, never complained. Senator Anderson's office representative gave the award with all the Living Independently staff, family, and friends there to congratulate them. David Lyons, Sean Fuentes, and Luis Sanchez continue to inspire as they volunteer for the Heartland Youth Built Charter School through the Living Independently is for Everyone nonprofit organization. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is our wedding album, and you can really see what a beautiful day it was. It was a really fun party.
It was the biggest day in Aaron Crable's life.
My husband John and I were married on October 20th, 2007.
But she can't look at these wedding pictures without remembering something else. Something that happened the very next day.
Many people know that was the day before one of the largest wildfires in San Diego history.
The Witch Creek Fire. Wind-driven blazes roared across San Diego's backcountry. destroying over 600 homes, including one owned by the parents of Aaron's new husband. It was a family catastrophe.
My new mother-in-law left the house literally with the clothes on her back and her animals in her car.
Unfortunately, these stories are not uncommon. During disasters, people sometimes lose everything, a lifetime of documents, memories, treasured belongings. In the panic of an evacuation, sometimes people just aren't prepared.
I don't believe that having 15 minutes and being unprepared is going to allow you to make good decisions.
When an emergency like a fire is happening, is not the time to decide what your most important possessions are. The County of San Diego says, think ahead of time. Create a grab-and-go kit. Aaron has one now.
Insurance documents, photographs. It has a key to our safety deposit box and things that basically are irreplaceable. Something that I keep in a convenient space if we needed to leave the home quickly.
Remember also, ATM machines may not be working, so keep some cash and prescription medications and a first aid kit.
One very simple step that people can take is to register their mobile phones with Alert San Diego so that they receive evacuation notifications quickly from local law enforcement. Preparing for disasters doesn't really have to be complicated or expensive. It really is just a matter of a few simple, easy steps.
What happened to Aaron's in-laws on that day in 2007 is a tragic reminder that a little bit of preparation can preserve a lifetime of memories.
Bye, Jack.
For Aaron and her family, there's now comfort in knowing they're prepared.
My peace of mind is based on the fact that I know that if I was given 15 minutes to leave, I would be able to concentrate on the health and safety of my family and not what I need to bring with me.
Just a little bit of preparation can mean so much.
Crazy kids.
If you have to grab and go. In the County News Center, I'm Suzanne Bartol.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The Adams Avenue Street Fair takes place Saturday and Sunday, September 27th and 28th. It's one of the largest free music festivals in San Diego County, and it will feature more than 100 musical acts this year. One of them is Raylee Nicole. Leon Thompson with East County Magazine sat down with Raylee about a year ago when she was just getting her start at the Coyote Music Festival in Rancho San Diego at Cuyamaca College, and we thought this would be a good time to replay our interview with the very delightful and talented Raylee Nicole.
But all I know is this feels right when we're under the stars tonight. These butterflies that I can't fight, so just let them fly.
It's Leon Thompson, and I'm here with Raylee Nicole, a promising young musician from East County. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you. Yeah, so I grew up my whole life in East County, my whole 18 years of life. We've moved around a lot, but basically it's been the same two freeway exits the whole time. I went to elementary school, middle school, Boston Valley and then Las Coches Creek. And then I went to high school, Granite Hills, and I just graduated.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, I first heard you at the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was a really fun experience. It was the first music festival I've ever been a part of. And I had no idea that I was actually going to be in that. And one day I was at Starbucks in Rancho San Diego. They have an open mic. So I was at the open mic. Then I happened to walk in to grab a Starbucks. And on the little bulletin board, they had like a little flyer saying, oh, musicians need it. I'm like, oh, that's me. I think it was a website. And I looked on and it was the music festival. And I'm like, that would be super cool. And they were having tryouts. So I went to the tryouts. And it was really intimidating because I walked in and I was still a senior in high school. So it's all these college kids in this big, giant, like, performance hall, so, like, with a stage and chairs, like, theater-looking. And so I was on the stage all by myself, me and my guitar, and then all these people in the seats. Part of their class was to judge the auditions. So they're all staring at me with papers, writing down notes. I had no idea what they were writing. And they're all looking up at me every now and then. So, and then I started playing, and one guy in the front, I remember, was, like, dancing to it, so I felt a lot better. I was like, okay, they like it. I'm not going to die. So, and then I think they emailed me or called me back. They really liked your audition. We'd like to have you play at the festival. So my drummer Kimo and I just got together, practiced a little bit, came up with the set, and then we got to play, and it was so much fun. It was the coolest thing. It was, you know, it was a really nice day, so everyone was out there on blankets, like with picnics, and there was like tons of little booths around, and I think it was only their second or third annual. It was really new, so I'm sure it's gonna even get bigger and bigger every year. So the students were running everything. That's a really cool class, you know, to teach kids to run a festival. That's something that you don't learn every day. There was a lot of other musicians and bands, and they had face painting. I got to get my face painted and snow cones and just little vendors and everything. So it was a really cool way to bring the whole college area community together.
Speaking of your music, how would you describe it?
I would describe my music as like a relaxing summer playlist, you know, when you're driving in the car. I have some upbeat songs that really get people going. I'm a typical teenage girl, so what else am I going to write about rather than, you know, the boy I have a crush on or something? So a lot of my songs are about that kind of feeling when you don't really know the person too well, but you can't wait to see what happens in the future. And I think that's one of the funnest feelings ever, is like the feeling of possibility or who knows what's going to come. You know, I really like this guy and he, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I like him. That's all I know. I have a couple other ones. They're also upbeat, and I'm trying to write more of these songs lately because it's how I feel, and it's more just about believing in yourself and not really listening to negative people, or, you know, just positive sort of things, and just about good feelings, and sounds like rainbows, butterflies kind of thing. But, you know, I like that. So I like inspiring people to believe in themselves and go for what they really want to do rather than just be sad. But then on the other hand, I do have a couple sad songs that are extremely sad. So, but I think that's kind of what I like to make myself relatable, saying, you know, I understand how they feel, or like certain feelings that people don't like to touch on. But if the lyrics can understand how they're feeling, I think people like that and they'll relate to that and want to listen to that more. Yeah.
Can you do one of your songs for us?
Yes, I can. Is that the one?
Pouring Down.
Yes, I can.
All right. Thank you. Let's hear that.
So much more I haven't told you. There's so much more that you don't know. And everything's so new, but just trust me and I'll trust you. I've still got so much more of me to show. You've got those eyes that make me wonder. I wonder if you feel the way I do. Now I can't concentrate and it's your fault. I can't think straight, just tell me if your hands are shaking too. We're not too sure about anything, but honestly for me, that's okay. Kiss me in the rain out where it's pouring down, but I don't care, I'm giving up and I'm so scared to let you in. But all I know is this feels right when we're under the stars tonight. These butterflies that I can't fight, so I'll just let them fly. Now how come everything's so
beautiful when I'm with you. The way we laugh on accident. I think I'm going under eyes. We dance to the flash of thunder. We're so cool, we won't go inside just yet. We're not too sure about anything. But honestly, for me, that's okay. You kiss me in the rain, out where it's pouring down, but I don't care. I'm giving up and I'm so scared to let you in. But all I know is this feels right when we're under the stars tonight. These butterflies that I can't fight, so I'll just let them fly. Butterflies that I can fight, so I'll just let them fly.
Well, thank you, Riley.
You're welcome.
So what's coming up in your career? What is next for Riley?
The next thing I really want to do is record a full album, 12-song album, mix of, you know, happy and sad ones. I still need a couple more songs before I do that, but I want to record that album, kind of tour around the country, kind of the poor musician's tour where I, you know, get in my own car and drive around, but hey, a tour is a tour. Just spread the music and see, you know, how far I can get it to go.
How did you get your musical training?
I have been taking piano lessons ever since I was 5 years old, and then I went all the way until high school started, so up till I was 15, so it was 10 years of piano lessons, and then I did, I think, like a week or two of vocal lessons when I was in middle school or something, and I didn't like it very much, and then even back then, I wasn't trying to sing, I just went to lessons just because, but I never really started singing until after my freshman year in high school, and that's when I started playing guitar as well, because my grandparents got me a guitar for Christmas during my freshman year, and then I didn't really do much with it. I learned a couple chords, and then that was that, and then after my freshman year of high school, during that summer, I think I put up my first YouTube video, and all my friends were like, oh my God. Now I look back on it and I'm like, oh, that was not very good at all. But back then, I mean, I got tons of praise for it. So I was like, okay, if I can hide on the computer screen and they like it, now I can go in person and maybe they'll like it too. So I started to play covers at local coffee shops and things like that in South Park and North Park, City Heights area. I started writing originals and playing those. And then that got me to go up and produce the EP and everything. And I never took any guitar lessons. It was really just, if you really, really want to learn something, you'll figure out a way to teach yourself. You will learn it. And especially today with the internet, it was so easy. I was on YouTube all the time. UltimateGuitar.com was a blessing because once you learn how to read, because I used the book to teach myself to read chords and tab. And then once I could do that, I could get on Ultimate Guitar. And then each song had chords and tabs with it. And I was like, okay, well, now I can play the song. I would play it like 5 hours a day, like so much. And so I think I learned quickly. It kind of kickstarted a lot of time. I compacted it into one summer. But yeah, I never took lessons. I just used YouTube videos and online everything. So.
We're really glad that you did.
Thanks.
your voice is lovely and sweet.
Thank you.
And I like your chord progressions and changes and the range. It's just beautiful. So
thank
really
you so
appreciate
much.
You coming in
Thank
and talking
you.
To us.
Thanks.
We've been speaking to Riley Nicole. So how can people reach you if they want to hear some more of your music?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those social network things that everyone likes to go on. Just look up Raelee Nicole, which is R-A-E-L-E-E. That's Raelee. And then Nicole is N-I-K-O-L-E. And then I have a website, www.raeleenicole.com. www.raeleenicole.com.
Thank you so much, Raelee.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we're sitting down with Supervisor Diane Jacob in her office in El Cajon to talk about a very important subject, which is the increasing number of sexually violent predators being released into East County. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Now, how many of these sexually violent predators have been released into East County in recent years?
Well, unfortunately, there have been 7 in recent time in East County. Now, 6 of those are in the 2nd District in East County and then 1 in Borrego.
Now, we understand that the law, as of right now, requires that when these guys get out of prison, they be released to the counties where they came from. But why is East County being singled out so disproportionately? Why aren't some of these offenders being sent to North County or South County or Central San Diego?
Well, it's up to a property owner. And if you have a property owner that really doesn't care about their neighbors, doesn't care about the community, and all they care about is the money, because there's big money in this, then they are agreeable to renting out. If you don't have a property owner that agrees to rent out their home or their house to a sexually violent predator, which, by the way, is the worst of the worst, this is somebody you don't want in your community, they should stay locked up for good.
Yeah, these are guys who have kidnapped people, they have raped children, all sorts of serious stuff.
It's very serious. And what happens when they're released into the community, it changes the lifestyle of the people in that community forever. And we talk about Jacumba and Campo and Descanso and all of our backcountry communities. These are family-oriented communities. Yeah. It's very, very, very close-knit.
Yeah, people moved out there because they liked the wide open spaces and they didn't want to be in the big city with all of those high crime problems in urban areas.
That's exactly right. Many of them, they've kept their doors open and so on. So this is a lifestyle change for that community. It's not fair.
Now, what we had been hearing from the state and from the company that they hire to monitor these guys after they're released was not to worry. They're monitored with ankle bracelets. You know, no concern for community safety. And yet, in Jacumba, we just had one of these guys wander into an elderly woman's home and sexually assault her. How can that happen, Diane? What are you hearing about that? How can he wander off like that without having alarm bells sounding somewhere?
Well, the system is broken, and the placement, and it's totally outrageous, and the system is broken. It doesn't work. We know that, because out of the 7 that have been released, 3 of those have broken their conditions of release and have been sent back.
And 1 died, so we have 3 left for now.
So keep them locked up. Why take the chance? I mean, what a judge relies on are several so-called mental health experts at our state mental hospital that think that they know that the individual is safe to be released into the community.
So there is some discretionary power. They don't have to let these guys out.
Absolutely. If they don't pass the test, first they go to prison. District attorney then applies for civil commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And then through the civil commitment process, if that's granted, they go to the state mental hospital. And then if they go through certain steps, then there's a few mental health experts that determine whether or not the individual is safe to be released into the community. I say they're not safe to be released. So then that recommendation goes to a judge, and then there's a hearing, and I will stand by the community at every one of these hearings and will protest it. And I do think there is discretion. Absolutely there is discretion.
Now, have the sentencing guidelines changed, Diane? In other words, if a person committed the same crime today, would they be put away for a longer period of time? In other words, is this a long-term problem, or are we seeing sort of a bump in the python where eventually these cases in the pipeline will be worked through and the new ones committing crimes will be put away for a longer period of time?
My understanding, according to the district attorney's office, is that there is a finite population that could be released in San Diego County.
And how many is that?
It's about 70 total.
70? That's a lot.
70, and that includes the 7 that have already been released. So there are more that the potential is there for more to come to San Diego County. And my point is, while we are being dumped on in our East County backcountry today, this could happen in any neighborhood at any time in the San Diego County region if there is an absentee property owner that chooses to rent the property.
So that raises a couple of questions, Diane. One is, why are so many of them being released into East County instead of somewhere else? And two, what can be done, what should be done to protect people in our communities? I know, for example, that Megan's Law limits where they can be released. They can't be turned loose within a certain number of feet of schools or parks, for example. So what is the solution?
The first question that I would respond to is, why East County backcountry? It's not like the state allocates these sexually violent predators to certain areas.
In a way they do, though. The state says that they have to go back to the county they came from before they were arrested.
In the county, but as far as within the county, the areas are not designated.
Do you think they should be?
No, I think these people should stay locked up. But Liberty Healthcare, which is the contractor that the state of California contracts with, goes out looking. And they go out looking, trying to find a willing property owner willing to rent their house to a sexually violent predator. And unfortunately, they've had success in our East County communities, in our backcountry.
Now, there's been a couple of cases where residents managed to get these decisions reversed and keep the predators out of their neighborhoods. I remember one case where the community members got out and protested and complained to the landlord, and eventually the landlord backed down and decided not to lease to Liberty.
Ramona, that happened, and the property owner did live in Ramona. And when the community found out about it, and when I found out about it, we went to the property owner and talked to the property owner, and because there was a lot of community opposition, the property owner decided wisely not to rent the house. So that was a success.
So that's one thing neighbors can
do. That absolutely. It just raised a fuss. And I will be right with people in the communities on these proposed placements to just raise as much fuss and much noise as we possibly can. The other thing that happened in Spring Valley was there was a proposed placement on Millar Ranch Road. And due to the fact it was found that there was a daycare center across the street, then the state had to withdraw that particular location. So, you know, do we have to locate or start up a daycare center across the street from every one of these proposed places? There may be ways to take care of this because they cannot be placed within a certain distance where there are children. The problem with that is being in court and listening to the judge and the testimony, their kids close enough to these locations where placement's been made.
Yeah, they don't seem to take into account things like where the nearest school bus is or park.
Or the nearest playground, or where kids may be walking from their home to a playground, from their home to a school.
So I'm sure that you've spoken with our legislators, our representatives in Sacramento. Is there any form of legislative consensus forming, Diane, about what to do about this?
Yes, I have spoken to some of our area legislators, and some of them feel the same way I do, but some of them don't, and we're talking about legislators now throughout the state of California.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you say before that one solution in your mind would be to put these people, if they must be released, down on or near the grounds of the Otay prison. Why is that not being done?
Well, that has been done in the past, and it worked very well. And I said, if the individual has to be released, that's the only acceptable location is outside the walls of the Donovan State Prison site. The reason that's not happening The state has been saying that, no, you can't do that because the law requires that these sexually violent predators be integrated into the community.
Now, for those who do believe in rehabilitation and trying to give people second chances, do we have any statistics statewide on what percentage of these predators who've been released have actually reoffended? And of those offenses, how many are sexual offenses as opposed to, say, violating parole or drinking, something slightly less serious?
I don't have any of those numbers. I have just the numbers that we talked about earlier. Yeah.
3 out of 7 in East County reoffending, which is not exactly confidence-inspiring.
You know, when you talk about now the judges are saying they have to be integrated back in the community. The fact is, communities don't want them. They're never going to be integrated back into the community.
And did many of these offenders come from East County, or are we being dumped on with predators from other areas?
We're being dumped on, and it's outrageous, and it's not right.
Where can people get more information if they want to know if one of these predators is proposed for release in their area?
Well, there is the SAFE Task Force, and they are the ones that oversee this operation, receive the input. The district attorney's office, there's a contact there. And people should know that when I said earlier, these are the worst of the worst. There's different levels of sex offenders. Mm-hmm. There's the registered sex offender, which is on the Megan's Law database, mm-hmm. which everybody should know about and look up to see where the registered sex offenders live.
Yeah, I've looked on the Megan's List directory, and it's very shocking. These predators seem to be all over the place.
Very shocking. You have several levels, 3 levels, the registered sex offenders, mm-hmm. the high-risk sex offenders, and then you have the sexually violent predators that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Those are defined as individuals that have committed multiple sexual mm-hmm. acts, crimes, and been convicted, but also have a mental disorder. All those 3 categories, no one will guarantee that they will not reoffend. And our kids are at risk.
Right.
And that's the biggest issue here. My position has always been, if you commit a crime against a child, you lose your freedom and you should be locked up for good.
I think many people would share that sentiment and wouldn't want a sexual predator living next door to their family.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Supervisor Jacob, for speaking with us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
If you're a part-time or full-time worker, you'll soon have at least 3 paid sick leave days a year, starting in July 2015. Governor Jerry Brown has signed into law a bill authored by San Diego Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez. The bill is expected to impact 6.5 million workers, 40% of the state's workforce that currently lacks paid time off when they're sick. Under the new law, workers will earn 1 paid sick day for every 30 hours they work. Assemblymember Gonzalez voiced gratitude to her Democratic colleagues for passing the bill, which was opposed by Republicans. As a single working mom, I know firsthand the challenge of having to juggle a sick child who needs to see a doctor and your responsibilities at work, she stated. But no parent should have to experience the heartache of having to choose between making the rent and taking care of their child. The measure was backed by labor groups and opposed by business interests. Supporters say the bill was necessary to protect the health of workers and others, since employees who come to work sick can infect co-workers and the public. Opponents argued that the bill would cost employers money. But the website paidsickdays.org has published a fact sheet indicating that paid sick days actually reduce costs for employers by preventing other employees from becoming ill, while also reducing insurance and public health care costs. In San Francisco, many employers initially opposed a similar measure, but now two-thirds of San Francisco employers support the law, according to the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Governor Brown, in signing the bill into law, stated, "When you look at the power and the wealth that is accumulated by a very small percentage, and then you look at the people at the bottom, this is the least we can do, and there's more in the coming years." He called the bill a real step forward. Similar measures have been passed by several cities and by the state of Connecticut. At least 20 states now have paid sick leave measures introduced in their legislatures. The law exempts workers in a handful of industries, including airline flight crews under federal labor laws, employees under certain collective bargaining arrangements, and state-funded in-home health care providers, the Los Angeles Times reports. Employers are prohibited from retaliating against workers who request paid sick days and can face fines up to $4,000 a day if they refuse to pay a sick worker or otherwise violate the new law. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.